From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On Friday, June 1st, President Donald Trump directed his Energy Secretary Rick Perry to offer special concessions to coal and nuclear-powered plants, attempting to keep his long-held promise, especially to the coal industry. A newly leaked internal government memo published by Bloomberg revealed that the justification that the Trump administration is using is based on obscure World War II and Cold War era laws that remain on the books. Trump officials have cited national security concerns for why coal and nuclear power plants need to remain open, despite the fact that those industries have rapidly lost ground to natural gas, solar, wind, and other energy sources. A coalition of oil and gas trade groups wrote a letter to the government angry over what they perceived as favoritism by Trump, saying that the government's decision would result in higher electricity prices for ordinary Americans. Environmental organizations have denounced the decision to keep alive an industry that is arguably the worst carbon impact on our climate, and that is, of course, coal. My guest is Kim Smazniak. She is a staff attorney with Earth Justice. That's one of those environmental organizations deeply concerned about this decision. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Thank you, Sonali. Happy to be with you.
So the memo that I mentioned is this 40-page internal memo, I'm guessing not really meant for public consumption, that goes into detail, or maybe it was, maybe it was purposely leaked. You can never tell in these days. But it goes into great detail about the justifications that need to be used, including this bizarre sort of national security claim for why coal and nuclear power plants are essential to the security of this nation. Where did this memo come from?
Well, Bloomberg obtained a copy after what appears to have been leaked. It does appear to have been put together by Department of Energy officials and seems to disclose some of their internal plans on how they plan to help bail out the failing coal industry.
And so the industry is, of course, one, the coal industry had, even before Trump took power, had been one that was in deep decline, right? As many pro-coal advocates and climate change deniers have blamed Obama for purposefully undermining this industry, saying that it was just onerous regulations that have led to the decline of the industry. But hadn't the industry already essentially been losing ground to much more easily available energy sources?
Yes, that's correct, Sonali. This is a part of a much longer trend in that the coal industry, coal plants are largely not making money in these markets. They are not economic. Their energy is more expensive than alternative sources, including renewable energy sources. And so frankly, they're not making money and are going bankrupt and are looking for ways to try to meet their expectations for that return on investment that's so important to plant owners. And in the Trump administration, they found a willing audience for that message. And we see in this memo what have been a continuous series of efforts to find excuses to support this industry. We like to say that it is an answer looking for a question. That is, that they want the answer to be that we need to protect these coal plants from their own bad business decisions, and as a result are looking for ways to justify that outcome.
So let's get into what this memo actually explores. The idea, as far as I understand, is that apparently because coal and nuclear industries and plants can have on hand some level of backup fuel are able to store fuel in case our grid happens to go offline, that gives these industries some special right to continue to operate with, I'm assuming, government help. Is that one of the justifications they're using?
Yes, precisely. There's an argument that's being put forward by the administration that somehow these coal and nuclear plants are needed above others because of so-called fuel security. Of course, every grid expert who has looked at these issues has simply rejected the idea that our grid is in danger due to a lack of some particular category of resources. Frankly, the coal plants that are anticipate retiring are ones that are not going to cause any risk to the grid. Power outages are not going to result. And we know this because the department has previously tried to pursue exactly this same argument and went to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and asked for essentially the same thing. They argued there, they said, we need these plants to be online and they should deserve special compensation. And there the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the expert in these areas, soundly rejected it. All five commissioners rejected that very idea, including ones that were appointed by the Trump administration. Wow. And so we have a situation in which this is just the same set of arguments being pursued now in a manner where the department believes it can continue and move ahead without the need of going back to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mm-hmm. So they're looking to circumvent that ruling.
So that commission, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, already rejected this last year. What the government was asking the commission was to guarantee financial returns for any power plant that could stockpile 90 days worth of fuel on site. Guarantee financial returns, what does that mean? Taxpayer dollars, subsidies, or higher electricity rates?
That would be basically a fantastic bailout from the coal industry's perspective. It would mean Americans would pay a lot more on their energy bills, even though they wouldn't get any better performance. No one would get any better service, but you'd have to pay a whole lot more. And worse, Americans would pay a dear cost in terms of rising pollution. Of course, what's amazing in this entire conversation is that while we're talking about a so-called grid crisis, the real crisis for the grid is that climate change and the extreme weather events that it caused are the biggest threat to the grid. And those are risks that aren't even anticipated or discussed in this memo. Instead, what the administration would do, very perversely, would be to prop up some of the most dirty polluting plants, the ones that are most threatening from a climate change perspective.
So, of course, coal and nuclear face a lot of competition from energy sources, both renewable and low emission energy sources and high emissions such as energies with a big carbon footprint like natural gas and, of course, ongoing oil production, petroleum production. But this memo cites that there are dangers, cybersecurity dangers to natural gas pipelines, and also says that our electricity grid is vulnerable to extreme weather-related events. It uses a language that almost comes close to saying climate change could be a problem in terms of taking this grid online. Therefore, we need to rely more on climate change exacerbating technologies like coal. I mean, it was pretty amazing. The memo doesn't mention climate change at all, but it does mention extreme weather, right?
That's right. And it is. It's, as you said, it's very hard to look at this and take it seriously when they're avoiding the elephant in the room of climate change. This is a true crisis that the government is not taking the lead on and, in fact, is avoiding talking about in every space of the government. And it is a big concern.
Now, the claim that very strict regulations have been what have pushed coal out of business, those don't hold up to water either, right? And on the sort of tangential issue, it's been that sort of false claim that the Trump administration has been using to strip regulation after regulation that protects Americans from pollution and polluting industries.
I'm glad you brought that up, Sonali. I mean, this is a study that the Department of Energy under the Trump administration itself ran. They looked at the allegation that what is driving these coal retirements. And frankly, they came away with the conclusion that it's competition. Competition is driving these plants to retire. That is that, for example, gas plants that are coming onto the system, they can do exactly the same thing and they can do it cheaper. And as we know, in a market where there's competition, that means that the ones that can't do the job as efficiently, they shut down. And that happens to the benefit of consumers bills. It means you get power more cheaply and also cleaner air as a result. And so that's exactly what the results of the government's own study say. And this memo a little bit goes in the opposite direction of the department's own conclusions.
So if you're a free market capitalist, you would let the coal industry die a natural death. If you are a protectionist who thinks that, that there's no such thing as climate change, then you would essentially be in favor of what the Trump administration is doing, right?
Yeah, it's a bit mind-boggling. This is a Soviet-style takeover of private markets. And it's a bit strange to say that the Republican Party, which has traditionally been, a supporter of free markets, the GOP president, is leading the charge towards this kind of takeover and movement away from free market economics.
If we had these standards being applied to any other industry that the Trump administration didn't like, or people were calling for that, they would be denounced as socialists. We don't see the same care being given to, say, the healthcare needs of Americans, to have financial guarantees for covering the healthcare needs of Americans. But the coal industry, now that's something that is somehow worthy of government support.
It is called picking winners, and it seems to be the key driver. I mean, certainly this is something where it seems there are political motivations. We have seen since the campaign trail that the Trump campaign was about stopping the war on coal and bringing back coal. And this seems to be something that they view as a political thing that they need to bring back based on their campaign promises. So certainly that seems to be the motivation, and it does not seem to be something that's a consistent, principled position that cuts across other areas.
I want to bring up one example that sort of shows the very obvious political pandering to Trump's political base. There is a company in April, First Energy Solutions is the name of this corporation. It's basically an Ohio-based utility that has filed for bankruptcy. It runs both coal and power plants in Ohio and Pennsylvania. And the company literally wrote to Energy Secretary Perry and said that he and the Trump government should invoke Section 202C of the Federal Power Act to save this corporation's power plants. And then Donald Trump basically said the same thing, said, we're going to use Section 202, whatever that is, to save this company. What is Section 202?
So there is a statute called the Federal Power Act. When used properly, Section 202C of the Federal Power Act gives the government power in an emergency. Imagine there's a lightning strike that damages some transmission lines, or there is a true crisis in which in the heat of the emergency, there's a concern that there's going to be widespread consequences, blackouts, that may threaten, cause an emergency for people who are dependent on that power. In those circumstances, and very rarely historically, the government has employed that power in order to make sure that we continue to be able to supply energy that's needed. This kind of sweeping use of 202C to save plants that are uneconomic, where there are no consequences to the reliability of the grid, is simply unheard of. Yet that seems to be precisely what First Energy has asked this administration to do, and it now does appear to be that they are seriously considering that.
So First Energy writes to Rick Perry, asking him to use the government authority with this law. And then at a rally in West Virginia, this is what Donald Trump said to presumably the coal miners in the audience and those who are in his base. He said, we're working on coal, clean coal. I always say clean, beautiful coal. And we're working and the miners are happy. The miners are happy. And we'll be looking at that 202. You know what a 202 is, right? Said Trump. We'll be looking at that. We're trying, but nine of your people just came up to me outside saying, could you talk about 202? And we'll be looking at that as soon as we get back. He's not even trying, Kim, to hide the fact that the coal industry is asking the government to bail them out using these obscure laws on the books. And Trump is basically openly pandering, and then any claim of national security is obviously simply a false claim.
Yep, it's just papering over the results that they'd like to achieve. And this is entirely looking to reward a group of political supporters. But most problematically, it is not just the effort to save the industry. It is really that this would line the pockets of a number of coal executives without addressing the real needs of communities, including communities like those who depend on coal jobs. There are real needs that could be addressed by government action to help coal communities transition towards sustainable long-term jobs. But by this kind of action, really what the Trump administration would be achieving is supporting a number of coal executives who presumably are the ones who have donated and supported a lot of his campaign needs.
I imagine that other industries, polluting or not, are unhappy about this favoritism. I mentioned the letter signed by a number of oil and gas corporations that are not happy about this. A broad energy coalition, they don't like the idea of another industry being subsidized. But of course, in general, polluting industries do receive forms of government subsidies, right?
So the energy sector is widely supported by government support, both from state level all the way up to the federal level. The history of the nuclear industry, for example, we couldn't have nuclear plants if there wasn't a heavy government program to make sure that those can get insurance. That's just an example. It is inherent throughout the industry that there has been government support. So that is true. Now, the concern here is that what the administration would be doing is stepping into an area in which there has been competition that has driven down costs and also made operations cleaner. And the Trump administration would be derailing those market outcomes to the benefit of a select number of players in a way that is extremely blatant, as we've discussed before. So, of course, we are going to see the other parts of the industry, the gas interests, the renewable, the wind, the solar folks, all of those folks are going to be negatively impacted because these select plants are going to be chosen to run more than others. And so as a result, they're going to be financially harmed. And I would very much expect that there is going to be a strong pushback against this legally going forward, certainly because it's entirely unjustified and the law itself is not meant to be used in this manner.
Kim, why is nuclear energy being included along with coal? Trump has very openly, tried to curry favor with the coal industry, but is the nuclear industry in that same boat?
I think the nuclear industry largely is along for the ride. It is also highly impacted in the sense that there are many retirements projected for the nuclear industry. And so the argument that if you need fuel security, the argument seems to be that then also nuclear plants that would be retiring would also fall into that category. However, I've just not seen the same evidence of the nuclear industry advocacy as being the primary underlying thrust and reason for this. I just haven't seen that evidence one way or the other.
Perhaps Trump is throwing nuclear in with coal to dilute the fact that he is so openly trying to gain political points on coal. Who knows? The other issue is that, of course, citing national security, the Trump administration has done so much in its short time in office for the U.S. military. And so the claim that the U.S. military, we need to keep our military strong and safe and strong from any vulnerabilities to its energy source. Therefore, we need coal and nuclear power. Does that stand up to reality?
It does not hold up to reality. And so there's a couple prongs of this. One is this idea that we do need a healthy supply of energy for our bases at home. But if you scrutinize that, the reality is that we have an abundance of energy. In fact, if you use an indicator of the major regional grids, they're all above the reserve margins that they would need in order to ensure reliability. And so if you're looking at, is there a scarcity here? The answer is resoundingly no. There's also, separately, when you look at what is the military itself doing to try to address potential vulnerabilities to its energy needs? And the answer there has been, the military has been moving historically towards moving away from dependence on the grid. So the last thing that they're doing is trying to depend on a single large coal plant to provide a set of energy needs and to have that kind of operational certainty and security. Rather, they're looking at distributed energy options, these newer technologies that are really antithetical to the, you know, the big coal model in order to ensure their security. And so the history has been that the military just is not moving this direction of quote-unquote fuel security as its means of ensuring that we have national security here in the homeland.
And then, Kim, Earth Justice and other environmental organizations are, of course, most deeply concerned, not as much about the unfair competition, but about the carbon emissions from these deeply polluting industries, not just coal, but oil and gas as well. So if we care about energy competition and energy security, but also equally, perhaps more, care about our climate, the survival of our species, wouldn't it be wonderful to see the government actually subsidize, in the interest of national security and public safety, non-polluting, renewable, sustainable energies like solar and wind? Wouldn't that be the flip side of what we're seeing actually transpire?
Certainly. I mean, I've heard a number of commentators say that if anything, these kind of arguments for what is the urgent need in order to make sure that our grid is safe going forward, that we would need to more rapidly move to zero emissions technologies to more quickly make sure that we are building the wind and the solar capacity that we need and dealing with all of the related technologies that we will need in order to make sure that we can have a truly carbon-free power sector in the future. And so all of those are very good reasons to actually use these laws as they were intended, which would not be in this very heavy-handed, picking winners sort of manner. It would be a much more, let's focus on the actual technical capabilities that we need in order to transform our grid. And that indeed, that would be the proper and appropriate way, and one that's most beneficial for the public, for the government to move forward.
So finally, Kim, give out a website where people can find out more about the work of Earth Justice and also read your statements, et cetera, on this memo and what the Trump administration is doing about coal.
Yes, absolutely. We have at our website, www.earthjustice.org, we have a lot of information about our activities throughout the power sector and then fighting more broadly for climate objectives, making sure that those laws that are out there to protect Americans are being used in the right way by the government. And where they are not, we as an organization stand in. And so you can read all about our work in that area on the web.
And again, that's earthjustice.org. Kim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kim Smazniak is a staff attorney with Earth Justice. We've been discussing the Trump administration's decision to forcibly keep the coal and nuclear power industries alive. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.